This is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you and your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Arkansas Turfgrass Association. This episode is sponsored in part by Winrock Grass Farm, now featuring Ezoy, the most beautiful and environmentally correct lawn grass you can buy. Visit us at www.winrockgrassfarm.com to learn more. Now, let's get in the zone.
This episode features an article from Dr. Jeffrey Durr, professor of weed science at Virginia Tech, titled A Roundup on Glyphosate: History, Use, Issues, and Alternatives. Glyphosate has been in the news quite a bit recently. You probably have seen the ads on television concerning glyphosate and human health. In this article, we discuss some background information on this herbicide as well as scientific reports on toxicity of the chemical. What is glyphosate? The glyphosate molecule is similar to the amino acid glycine. The chemical name is N-glycine, a relatively small molecule compared to newer herbicides. It is the active ingredient in products such as Roundup Promax, as well as in generic products sold under a variety of trade names. Since the chemical is off patent, the patent expired around 2000, other companies besides Monsanto Bayer can sell this herbicide under their own trade names. Some examples of other trade names for products that contain glyphosate include Accord, Glystar Pro, Glyphamate 41, Razor, Rodeo, and Touchdown, among others. Formulation. The initial formation of this herbicide was an isopropylamine salt of glyphosate, which is still widely used, although other salt formulations are available now, such as the potassium salt and dimethylamine salt. This becomes important when comparing products. We need to look at the amount of glyphosate acid in products, not the amount of active ingredient, since the different salt formulations differ in their molecular weight. For example, Roundup Promax contains 5.5 pounds per gallon of the potassium salt of glyphosate, or 4.5 pounds per gallon glyphosate acid. Roundup Pro contained 4 pounds per gallon of the isopropylamine salt of glyphosate, or 3 pounds per gallon glyphosate acid. So Roundup Promax contains 50% more glyphosate acid than Roundup Pro, and application rates in terms of fluid ounces of product per acre are lower than for Roundup Pro. Besides glyphosate, there are other chemicals in commercial formulations, usually water and a surfactant. As an example of a formulation, Roundup Promax contains the potassium salt of glyphosate at 48.7% by weight, surfactants approximately 9%, and water plus minor ingredients at approximately 42%. Surfactants can aid in the absorption of herbicides by weeds. One example would be POEA. Concerns have been raised about the toxicity of this surfactant to aquatic organisms such as tadpoles, salamanders, and frogs. Aquatic formulations of glyphosate either do not contain a surfactant or contain a surfactant that has not shown to be an issue. That is why certain formulations of glyphosate are not labeled for aquatic use, not due to the toxicity of glyphosate, but due to the toxicity concerns about the surfactant to amphibians and other aquatic organisms. For glyphosate products that do not contain a surfactant, one generally needs to add an approved surfactant for optimum weed control. History. Glyphosate was found to control weeds by a Monsanto scientist in 1970. The herbicide was patented in 1971 and was introduced commercially as Roundup in 1974. Glyphosate use has increased over time, especially when Roundup Ready crops were introduced, starting with Roundup Ready soybeans in 1996. These soybean lines and later corn, cotton, and other crop cultivars were developed to be resistant to glyphosate through biotechnology. For these genetically modified crops, glyphosate could be applied over top for selective weed control. Mode of action. Glyphosate inhibits the enzyme EPSP synthase needed for synthesis of the aromatic amino acids tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine in plants. Animals, including people, do not make these amino acids, so they need to get these chemicals in their diet. Plants have to make these amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. So glyphosate inhibits a process that occurs in plants, but not in animals, resulting in a chemical that controls plants with low acute toxicity to animals, including people. Acute toxicity of glyphosate. A measure of toxicity is the LD50 value, the dose required to kill 50% of the test animal, usually rats. The higher the LD50, the lower the toxicity. The acute oral LD50 for glyphosate in rats is greater than 5,000 milligrams per kilogram, practically non-toxic. The acute dermal LD50 rat is greater than 5,000 milligrams per kilogram, practically non-toxic. For comparison, the acute oral LD50 rat for caffeine is 192 milligrams per kilogram. So caffeine is a much more toxic chemical than glyphosate. The acute oral LD50 rat for aspirin is 950 milligrams per kilogram, also more toxic on an acute basis than glyphosate. Another point to keep in mind is that risk associated with a given pesticide is based on the toxicity of the chemical along with the exposure level. Use. Glyphosate is a non-selective post-emergence herbicide, meaning that it controls essentially all weeds. The recent development of glyphosate-resistant weeds has pushed researchers and growers to find alternative means to control these weed species. However, most weed species are still susceptible to glyphosate. Glyphosate is systemic, so it moves into and controls underground portions of weeds, roots, rhizomes, tubers, etc., making it the preferred product for perennial weed control in many situations. This chemical binds to soil particles and has essentially no soil activity, so crops can be planted a week after application. Glyphosate is used for pre-plant weed control and site preparation, lawn-to-lawn renovation, spot treatment of weeds in landscape beds, as a directed spray application in fruit and nursery production, and for non-crop weed management, such as guardrails, railroad lines, and parking lots, among other uses. It controls grasses, sedges, and broadleaf weeds, making it a broad-spectrum herbicide. Recent issues about glyphosate. It has been suggested that glyphosate causes non-Hodgkin lymphoma, or NHL, which is a type of cancer, and other diseases. In one epidemiological report, associations between pesticides and NHL subtypes were reported, including B-cell lymphoma and glyphosate. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, part of the World Health Organization, listed glyphosate as a probable human carcinogen, along with the burning of wood, eating red meat, high-temperature frying, late-night work shifts, being a hairdresser or barber, spraying insecticides, and making art glass, among others. In August 2018, a jury in San Francisco ordered Roundup's manufacturer, Monsanto, to pay $289 million in damages to a school groundskeeper, Dwayne Lee Johnson, who argued that the glyphosate-based herbicide caused his cancer. A judge later upheld that decision, but reduced Monsanto's payout to $78 million. Recently, another jury in San Francisco ruled against Monsanto, with the jury concluding that glyphosate was a substantial factor in causing non-Hodgkin lymphoma in Edwin Hardiman, a 70-year-old Sonoma County man. Bayer, which bought Monsanto, responded by saying that there is over four decades of extensive science on glyphosate, and the conclusions of regulators worldwide support the safety of their glyphosate-based herbicides and that they are not carcinogenic. Harrell's has decided not to sell glyphosate products. Although the company feels that the weight of scientific evidence strongly supports its safety when used properly, their insurance provider would not cover any claims related to glyphosate. With apparently over 11,000 lawsuits filed against Monsanto, there is a financial risk from the insurance standpoint related to glyphosate. Another issue that has been mentioned is that glyphosate may affect bacteria in the gut microbiome. Low levels of glyphosate have been reported in certain crops, generally in the parts per billion range, although the EPA has determined that the low levels do not pose a significant health risk to humans. Low levels of labeled pesticides can sometimes be detected in food crops, but the EPA compares these levels to the toxicity data for that pesticide to determine a no effects level and to set residue levels allowed before approving a pesticide. Certain bacteria can be adversely affected by exposure to glyphosate. A recent issue that has been reported is an impact on the gut bacteria in honeybees, resulting in adverse effects. What does the scientific literature say about glyphosate and cancer? As of 2016, there were 23 epidemiological studies, 15 animal carcinogenicity studies, and over 90 genotoxicity studies for glyphosate. Reviews have been written summarizing the conducted studies. A review in 2012 found no consistent pattern of causation between glyphosate exposure and cancer. Some conclusions of glyphosate effects are not supported by available evidence. There was no association between glyphosate and any solid tumor, including non-Hodgkin lymphoma. The US EPA concluded in a 2013 report that glyphosate does not pose a cancer risk to humans. In 2016, EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs released a report. In it, EPA states that, quote, in epidemiological studies, there was no evidence of an association between glyphosate exposure and numerous cancer outcomes. However, due to conflicting results and various limitations identified in studies investigating NHL, a conclusion regarding the association between glyphosate exposure and risk of NHL cannot be determined based on the available data. Increases in tumor incidence were not considered treatment-related in any of the animal carcinogenicity studies. The overall weight of evidence indicates that there is no convincing evidence that glyphosate induces mutations in vivo via the oral route. EPA's overall conclusion was that glyphosate was, quote, not likely to be carcinogenic to humans at doses relevant to human health risk assessment. In 2017, the EPA issued a draft assessment, which also concluded that glyphosate is not a likely carcinogen to humans. The European Food Safety Authority and the EU member states concluded in 2015 that glyphosate is unlikely to pose a carcinogenic hazard to humans, and the evidence does not support classification with regards to its carcinogenic potential. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, in a 2016 summary report, concluded that, quote, in view of the absence of carcinogenic potential in rodents at human-relevant doses and the absence of genotoxicity by the oral route in mammals, and considering the epidemiological evidence from occupational exposures, the meeting concluded that glyphosate is unlikely to pose a carcinogenic risk to humans from exposure through diet. Why did the ARC reach a different conclusion than EPA and the EFSA and the FAO? The IARC only looked at publicly available reports, while EPA evaluated all data, including those submitted by the registrant and those not published. The IARC did not consider dose in their analysis, while the EPA considered dose to be relevant to the interpretation of data. EPA did a systemic evaluation of the quality for the studies conducted with glyphosate, while the IARC did less of a quality evaluation. There can be differing opinions on the interpretation of laboratory testing of pesticides. One cannot test chemicals on people, so scientists use a test animal such as rats. Labs will use only a limited number of test animals and may increase the dose to levels much higher than typical exposure levels of the chemical to try to force responses that may occur at low frequency or at low dosages. If cancer develops in the test animal only at doses much higher than a typical exposure would be, what do you conclude? Did the dose cause the response, or did the chemical cause the effect? Can you extrapolate the data to lower doses? These are questions that arise when interpreting results from lab studies. Alternatives to glyphosate. We do not have a ready alternative to glyphosate that provides the same level of weed control and use. The closest, in my opinion, is glufosinate, such as Finale and Cheetah Pro, another non-selective post-emergence herbicide that is inactivated upon contact with the soil. It works faster on weeds than glyphosate, but it is not as systemic as glyphosate. So glyphosate generally provides greater control of perennial weeds, especially perennial grasses, compared to glufosinate. There are non-selective post-emergent contact herbicides such as diquat, pelargonic acid, and acetic acid. These contact herbicides will not affect the underground portions of perennial weeds, so they are more effective overall on annual weeds. Decision making. Read the literature cited in this article and determine for yourself the benefits and risks to use of glyphosate. Be careful about articles you read on the internet, in newspapers, and in other media. Sometimes claims are made about chemicals that are not supported by scientific research. Ask to see data from published, peer-reviewed articles in scientific journals. If you plan to continue using glyphosate, as we plan to do here at the Research Station, follow information listed on the label. For example, the personal protective equipment for Roundup ProMax is a long-sleeve shirt, long pants, shoes, and socks. Read and follow all label directions and make sure the product you use has a label for the site to be treated. Be sure to check out all of our show notes for links and references cited in this article. And don't miss an episode. Subscribe to the Turf Zone podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at theturfzone.com.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. Thank you to our sponsors, including Winrock Grass Farm, now featuring Ezoy, the most beautiful and environmentally correct lawn grass you can buy. Visit us at www.winrockgrassfarm.com to learn more. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.